Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor podcast, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today, I'm in conversation with Tashinga Vekera, a part-time attorney and a full-time YouTuber. Enjoy this truly fascinating conversation. Tashinga, yeah. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Well, thank you.
So, I decided that we needed to have this conversation for a number of reasons. A lot of young people who are overseas, and some adults who are overseas, usually call me and say, Trevor, is it safe to come home? And I say, it's always been safe. Mm. It's tough. Come back home and let's work and make it what we want it to be. And so people say, but oh no, I'm going to wait until it's okay. You decided in 2018 to come back home.
Yeah.
Why?
At the time, I think to understand why I came back, you need to understand how I grew up. So
let's go there.
I was born in Maronde, Rakwashoshe. My mom was 18 when she had me, stayed in Agogo for a bit, but then when she started working, we traveled so much. So most of my life, I spent it abroad. So lived in South Africa, lived in Singapore, lived in the UK, Kenya, etc. And people would always ask, what does your dad do? And I'm like, no, it's my mom. And after being away for so long, I was tired of being away. And it never felt like home. You know, you always feel like you have to kind of prove yourself or work against some stereotype or the other. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go home and at least work on being an attorney in my country. And if it doesn't work out, I have the option to go back to what I was doing before and move. Came back home. It was, you know.
Let's press the pause button there, because you just said quite a lot of stuff that I want us to unpack. You are away, you got educated, you got qualified, but you didn't fit. You felt you were not settled.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. There's a sense that the diaspora is all what we all need to be aspiring for.
Milk and honey.
Exactly. But talk to me about that. You feel you're a misfit. You've got the education. You still want to come home. Talk to me about that sense prior to you jumping onto the plane. What are you going through?
I think there's not enough that is said about being in a place with people who are like you and how much that affects just your mood, your way of being, your outlook on life, and ultimately your happiness. I can't knock being in the diaspora because, yes, there are opportunities. But at the same time, I don't think the happiness factor can be compared to when you're at home. And that was really a driving
proponent. I don't want us to knock being in the diaspora. Mm. I want us to describe being in the diaspora, what it is that you're longing for, what it is that you don't have. So we're not knocking it. I've been in the diaspora myself for 18 years. So I want for us to help people that are out there thinking of packing their bags to go into the diaspora, help people out there in the diaspora thinking of coming back home, using your lived experience. Talk to me about what it's like. You're describing what it's like wanting to come back home to people that are like you. But before we do that, I want us to talk about being out there, what it feels like, what it is that you don't have, what you need, what you crave for.
I would say it feels like working towards living your life at some point in the future. It feels like I will work hard right now so that in the future I can do this. And you're grinding on a day-to-day basis and there's no real breathing room or just the feeling of being settled. I think that, you know, it feels temporary most of the time. And that is what then drives the wanting of being home. But the feeling of being there is
people have spoken about loneliness.
Yes.
And not belonging. Has that been your experience?
I felt that at some point because, yes, I was in uni or I was working and it would be other African people. And there is a sense of commonality in that, but maybe not as many Zimbabweans. And you want to be with your people as well. It's something I've experienced not only through myself, but because so many, like most of us, of my family members are also there. And even in just the way of life, you become ships in the night. You barely see each other, even though you live in a 15-kilometer radius of each other. Because when you're doing night shift, I'm doing day shift. When you're doing weekend, I'm doing... And you're constantly in go, go, go mode. And that part is where you just need to settle down and bring it back.
I'll tell you, let's move home. Let's get onto the plane and come home. I say to people a number of times that there's a certain joy I feel when the plane touches down in Harare or in Bulawayo and I'm in the airport. I feel a certain connection. I can't describe it to you. You know, it would take me a PhD thesis to do that. But there's a certain, I come alive. I feel something in me that I don't usually experience when I'm away. Then I get out of the airport. Then reality hits, then the potholes, and then the rubbish and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I'm still happy to be back home. Talk to me about your experience.
Well, it's the same. It's like being in a house with leaking toilets, but it's your house. Mm-hmm. And you want to be there and not be a visitor at someone else's house saying, please, may I go to the toilet? Yeah. It's the comfort of it all. Yeah. I won't lie. Obviously, I used to visit a lot when I was still away. And coming to Zim would always feel like going back in time a little bit. But you start to appreciate that feeling a bit. Mm.
You hit a big hump, a big pothole when you came in. Mm. You've qualified as a lawyer. You couldn't get a job in London, or you couldn't have a visa to allow you to do stuff. Mm. Describe to us the experience of why you left the UK in terms of professional wise, and then coming here and trying to do the right thing to practice as an attorney.
So when I left the UK, right, I had, in my mind, done everything right. Like, I'm the top student. I do my work experience. I'm ticking all the boxes, right? And then I just wasn't able to get a training contract. It was at this time where everyone and their grandmother is also trying to be a lawyer. The competition was so stiff. And now, instead of having 3 years to get a job in the UK, you had 3 months after your exams. And then after that, you can't have a visa. So I'm literally stuck because my idea and my life trajectory had meant I'm going to qualify as a lawyer in the UK and work in the UK. Mm. So that got disrupted. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go qualify and be a lawyer in Zim. Came to Zim, and then the pothole was bigger than not being able to qualify in the UK. It took me since 2018 till 2021. Mm. Yeah. And I only got registered this year in order for me to be able to write my exams and to do all that red tape to just be able to be registered. And it really knocked me off.
So you start off by the law society or the examination.
Yeah, the CLE, the Council for Legal Education.
Requires you to write an exam. Mm. Talk to us about that process.
So you have to write, well, since I was coming from the UK, I had to write 8 exams. You have to apply to write the exams. Unfortunately, when I had come, there'd been a new SI saying people from the UK have to be approved to write the exams. That approval took 2 years for me to get to be allowed to write the exams. And then a year after that, that's
why
when...
Why does the approval take 2 years to come through?
Well, I would be the last person to know. most people come as soon as they apply, but it was just one of those things where you were continuously being told to go to the next person or the next person. And it was such a frustrating thing to go through because I'm thinking, oh, I really just want to write these exams and start my life. So only after 2 years was I allowed to write the exams. And lo and behold, we're in 2020 now and it's COVID and you don't know when you're going to write your exams. It could be next week. It could be 3 months from now, but you have to prepare like it might be tomorrow. So it was just a hectic time. Managed to write the exams, passed after two tries, so I had 8 exams, wrote 8 the first time, failed 4. I thought I was superwoman. Wrote the other 4 the second time, passed them, and then this year in April got registered.
I watched a video clip. Shall we play it?
So the year was 2018. That's when I came to Zim. And the reason I came to Zim was because I hadn't been able to get a job in the UK. So if you guys have been on my channel for a while, you know that that's where I did my LLB and my LLM and my LPC. I will never not brag on that, okay? That is my biggest flex. So I did my studies in the UK, but I wasn't able to get a training contract in time before my visa expired. So then I went to SA because my mom lives in SA. And I told my mom, I said, no, in order for me to prosper and to be able to move easier, I need to be registered as a legal practitioner somewhere. So the best place to me, in my mind, was in Zim because I wouldn't be worried about like, do I have a visa, this, that, and the other. Boom. The way that the process works in Zim, if you have done your degree or your LLB anywhere outside of Zim, or anywhere outside of the designated list of universities in Zim that they have, then you have to write what's called conversion exams. Previously, conversion exams were overlooked, administrated by the Law Society of Zimbabwe. However, in more recent times, there's a body called the CLE, the Council for Legal Education, and they're responsible for conversion exam contexts. Ideally, I was going to write it in one sitting. Okay. I'm like, maximum 2, and I'll be done. Straightforward, right? Wrong. Who did you think you are? So I put in my application to be able to write conversions in 2018. Okay, I want you to keep the dates in mind so that you can understand the about damn time of where I'm coming from. So I put in the application in 2018. At that point, the CLE was telling me that there's just been this new SI that's been passed, which says that if you've studied in the UK, then you can't automatically be allowed to write conversions. Not even automatically be put in as a legal practitioner in Zim. No, you can't automatically be allowed to write conversions. Stay with me. So after you put in your application and then there's all these back and forth forms with your uni, the board, the CLE board, has to sit and review all the applications of people who came from the UK and then say whether or not they can write conversions. When it comes to the examinations themselves, there's only 2 sittings a year. I believe they're in June and November. I might be getting it wrong because I wrote during COVID. So the timelines there were, what is a timeline? Okay. Anyways, I'm moving ahead. I'm getting ahead of myself. I put in the application 2018 when I came here, which was about July 2018. I put in the application. August, September, October, November, I'm checking up to be like, has the board sat? Then they say, no, they're only going to sit next year, January. And I'm like, cool. January come through. Has the board set? No, they might sit in June, July, might. After about a year and a half, okay, of no, the board hasn't sat yet. I'm like, yo, I was just going through the frustration at that point. And also that's when, Ningi Ningi was trending on Twitter.
And so I was just frustrated, and I happened to tweet about my journey thus far to say, yo, I have all these qualifications, but I can't even work in my own country as a lawyer because these people have been telling me that the board has to sit for the past 1.5 years. And my life has literally been on hold because the way that it works, if you're not yet registered as a legal practitioner, you can't officially work. Like, you can work, say, as an intern, and you get a special letter from the law society allowing you to work for a specific law firm. But you're not registered. You're not qualified.
So you move from one office to the other. You think you've done everything, but you're still being... I like the way you describe in the clip that we've played, that you're made to feel like you don't know what you're doing.
Mm.
You're made to feel like you are begging.
Mm.
And you're told to come tomorrow, to go to the other office and that kind of stuff. Like I said, it reminds me of a book by Charles Dickens where you move from one... You're thrown from pillar to post, and all you're looking for is... to get a stamp,
mm-hmm.
because without that stamp, you'll not be able to do anything. Talk to us about that experience for you.
It's crippling.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you feel like my life can't start without this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've done everything right. I've done my part, but you feel knocked back because of other forces that are completely out of your control. It's just, it's paralyzing, really.
What did that do to you?
It was the biggest confidence knock I've ever experienced. Because I would always my identity was based on the fact that I'm an overachiever. My identity was based on the fact that I'm an A student and I'm always the best. And when you feel like you're not the best anymore, especially after you come out of school, I don't think there's enough that's said about getting into the real world and realizing you're not the best.
Yeah, yeah.
And how you have to grow into and from that. They don't do classes on that. And you can't get an A for that.
No.
So it was just a big confidence knock.
Particularly, Tash, I'm going to call you Tash, because I've got a godchild who's goddaughter, who's Tashinga Tash. Particularly when you've come home, you'd expect that people will open doors for you and throw, you know, stuff to celebrate you. But you hit these big bumpers. Do you get tempted? Let me go back where I came from.
Yeah.
And?
And the only thing, I think probably in the past year, it's been less so. But the year prior to that, prior to me getting my registration, I literally told my husband, I was like, I'm done. I'm not going to be here anymore. Are you coming? Because I'm going.
What does he say?
And he's so supportive. And he'll be like, yeah, sure. If you find something, then we'll go and do that. And I'm like, you know, I don't have anything. We're just going. But I think that's the advantage of having a calming energy. Because, you know, I'm an extrovert. I'm very out there. Yeah. So I kind of calmed down. And I was like, okay, what can I control? Because I don't want to go into the uncertainty of being there either. But at some point, it felt better than the certainty of doing nothing here.
Wow. That's painful.
Mm.
For me, what I found interesting was the fact that you've lived in a number of countries. You've experienced difference. You've experienced culture shocks. Was this culture shock the worst?
Not the worst, but unexpected because it's my culture.
Yeah.
Like, why am I getting shocked by my own culture? It was just not what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I somewhat expected it because people do speak about, oh, things in Zim are like this, etc. And when you're a bit removed from it, you're like, is it really that bad? I mean, it's bad for everyone. I have my own issues here. But it's a different it's a different difficulty.
What did you expect, Tash?
I expected that if you pull yourself by your bootstraps and you do what you're supposed to do, it will work right. I expected that when things go wrong, it's because you haven't done something. And that's not always the case. And I think that's a narrative that's pushed by a lot of people, that you're the reason why your life is like this. And sure, for maybe like 80%, yes. But there's something that has to be said about how the externals can really affect how, whether or not you can do anything about it.
But you did something about it, because this year you were registered as an attorney.
Yeah.
So you did something. That goes to say you can do something and change your circumstances. Any pushback from you on that?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
I can't speak for everyone. But in terms of me and my demographic, I'm very privileged, Trevor. Like, I was able to do exams without needing to worry about work, because prior to my husband supporting me, my mom supported me. It's a very unique position that not a lot of, even other people in the same exam hall as you, are making these sacrifices to go from Bulawayo to come and write exams. And they're thinking to themselves, I don't even know if I'm going to write now. Like, what do I do? There were certain things that I had the luxury of not having to think about that allowed me to still have the energy to persevere. And I, like I say, I can't speak for everyone, but I think that when certain things happen, I can't also negate the way how I live my life gives me an advantage in being able to continue pushing forward.
I hear you. So, ta-da, congratulations.
Thank you.
You are now...
Finally.
You're now an attorney. How does it feel like?
Not what I expect. I feel like we'll do, like, this show will be not what I expected. With
Trevor.
Know
what else be, yeah.
It's really not, because I thought that once I get it, it'll be like, yes, now I'll have all the jobs in the world. They'll be looking for me. And that was not the case either. So it was really hard trying to find a job, get a job, something that's well-paying, or at least, you know, reasonably paying, because... You know, even within the legal fraternity, like, it's difficult getting a job or getting a job that compensates at anything that looks livable. Mm. So that was also difficult. And then at some point I was like, do I really want to be a lawyer anymore? Mm.
So you're dealing with that question.
Yeah.
And what's the conclusion to that question?
It's yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yeah, that's why I do it part-time attorney. Full-time YouTuber. I think I want to do it under my own terms.
So you're doing part-time. Just explain to us the part-time attorney bit that you're doing.
So I'm actually a consultant for this transaction advisory firm called Emerging Africa. And I do part-time consultancy with them. And it's not strictly legal. It's more so transaction and commercial. So I'm not restricted to just being a lawyer, because also I think for me to be, you know, I'm not the typical lawyer. I go in with my big hair and my nose rings and people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, yeah, but I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I decided that consultancy is better for me. And I'd rather pursue my passion of being a YouTuber.
Mm-hmm. We will get to the YouTuber bit, which is very important. But I want us to go to the beginning. Which schools did you go to? Primary school. I want you to walk us through that phase of your life.
Jeez. I started at Greencroft Nursery School. Went to Avondale Primary School, went to Gateway Primary School, went to Kyle Prep School boarding in Mashingo. Then I moved away to South Africa, went to St. Mary's DSG, And then I moved to Singapore, went to the German European School of Singapore. And then...
You did an IB there.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me, why did you decide to do an IB?
At the time, it was deemed the hardest thing you can do. And if you're successful at it, people in the job market will be like, ooh, you did the IB. Mm-hmm. Come on in.
Has it worked like that?
Not what I expected, Trevor.
Yeah, which is why I ask these questions, because I think not what I expected is the theme of life.
Mm.
And here's the difference. The difference is when you embrace not what I expected and turn it into what you want it to be.
Exactly. So it wasn't what I expected, but I have, in certain instances, used it to my advantage.
Because it's when I saw it, I was like, wow, okay, this is the real thing.
Mm.
And then after that, after doing your IB in Singapore, what else did you do?
Then I went to uni in the UK. So I did my LLB at the University of Sussex. And then I did my master's in IT and intellectual property law at the same university. And then I went to London to do law school at BPP.
And why law in the first instance? So you do your IB in Singapore. What attracted you to law? What influenced you? What inspired you?
It's, I don't know if you want the real answer.
I want the real answer. I want the real answer.
So I was watching a lot of Grey's Anatomy at that time.
Wow.
And I was like, it's either I'm going to be a surgeon or I'm going to be a lawyer. And, you know, when you have those career advisory classes and then they say to be a surgeon, it's going to take you 12 years. To be a lawyer, you can do it in 4. I was like, lawyer.
you know, the real answer, the real actual, as we say, says we draw our inspiration from so many places. And it's important that we be careful about what draws our attention, because mm-hmm. that's where our inspirations come from. So there you are. Grey's Anatomy leads you to becoming to wanting to go into law. And then what about specialization, the digital, the technology bit? Where does it come from? What draws you to that?
Whilst I was in law, I think there was a part of me that felt like I don't think I'm supposed to be a traditional lawyer. And then I thought to myself, how do I carve out a niche for myself within this thing that I've already started doing? My mom is paying for uni fees. I'm here for 4 years already. And now I'm deciding maybe I don't want to be a lawyer. No, I will find out what can I do within law that will be my niche. And then that's when it came to IT and intellectual property law, because I've always been more of a creative. Mm. And that seemed to me like a way of joining the two worlds together.
Mm. You know, again, when I was looking at that, I'm like, this is a young person that people throughout the world, corporate, should be running for. This is talent that is
you talent,
short supply.
You talent.
I am attracted to your dissertation topic, General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, and the right to be forgotten. Talk to me about, as succinctly as possible, your key findings, because that's an interesting area. A lot of us would want to be forgotten. A lot of us would want to get our data back and that kind of stuff. What have been your findings? What are the lessons that you'd want to share with our viewers out there?
So when I was doing that dissertation, I wanted to specialize in the GDPR, and that's when it had literally just was about to be passed. And then in doing my research, et cetera, the right to be forgotten really struck to me, because what it speaks to is when you have certain information on the internet that is outdated or untrue, and right now the world we live in is so internet-based that your persona on the internet becomes the person you are in life. And if it's inaccurate or if it's outdated information that's out there about you, it's influencing how you're perceived, the jobs you can get, etc. So what the right to be forgotten speaks to is giving people the right to get that kind of information back. Of course, there's certain limits as to when you can, but it's more so just having that right to be able to. And my findings at the end of it was, for me personally, I felt like the right to be forgotten should be declared like an internet, like an internet human right.
Human
and
right.
There should be internet human rights that are trans-border and do not work in terms of whatever constitution you're working with in this situation, because the internet is just so interconnected and borderless. I feel like there should be an internet human rights.
I agree with you. I agree
Thank
with you.
You.
Because we're living in the internet age, isn't it?
And yeah.
Like you're saying, our persona, who we are, the information, and the fact that our parents put us on the internet when we were born, isn't it? Ta-da!
Yeah.
We've got a new
My
child.
Baby.
My baby. And the baby's on the internet. I ought to have a right to go back and say, there's stuff that was put on the internet without my permission by my parents, and I want to erase some of that. Where are we with that? Do we have those rights at all? Are there limits and so forth? Where are we with that?
Because it's such an ever-progressing area of law, like the internet is changing on a daily basis,
yeah.
And hackers get better at their jobs the more you try and regulate it. There are certain things that legislation is trying to do in terms of especially protecting children and privacy protection. But as the way it is with the internet, legislation tends to be slower than what's actually happening on the ground. Yeah.
Again, you have a number of arsenals, your degree and your qualifications. By the way, people will say, Trevor, what university did she go to? She went to BPP Law School in London, and it stands for Brierley, Price, and Pryor, who are the founders of this school. And then the other university that I have problems in pronouncing, the University of?
University of Sussex.
Yes, I can never pronounce that. Thank you for pronouncing for me. What's the next big thing for me, for you? There's the YouTuber bit. I want us to go into that because I'm a YouTuber myself.
Uh-huh.
So what's the next big thing as far as you're saying you're debating? Do I want a law? Do I want to do what? And yet, as I sit here, your qualifications are the future.
That is ideally the next big thing for me. Within Africa, and even more so within Zim, we only got our data protection law in December last year. Data protection is such a new thing that I feel like because of my background, like why would I not take advantage of that and do data protection consultancy? So that's what I'm working on and trying to upskill myself because, you know, I've learned that learning doesn't end at uni.
No,
apparently there's more.
No,
like daily,
absolutely.
Apparently.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to upskill in order for me to set up a consultancy for data protection and still YouTube.
Fantastic. Shall we go over to YouTube?
Sure.
Why did you decide to be a YouTuber?
I was bored.
I mean, it's a crazy thing.
It's
hectic. Talk to me. Why did you decide to be a YouTuber?
In the beginning, I was bored. I was in uni. I started when I was in uni. So I started in like 2017, 16. And I was just like, I think I could do this YouTube thing. And then once I started, I was like, I really like it. And then I just kept on doing it. Once I started kind of realizing what kind of content I wanted to create, and it's a continuing journey.
Yeah.
I'm not sure yet, but I think I've sifted out. It became even more exciting, and I started seeing myself investing more time and more money into it, even though it wasn't paying me. And it kind of spoke to, you know, those hobbies that aren't really side hustles, because everyone feels like hobbies need to be side hustles these days. No, like it's okay if I have a hobby that doesn't pay me.
Yeah,
because I love doing it. So that's why I continue with the YouTube.
Tash, what does it take to be a YouTuber? What do you need? What do you require? Apart from your character.
An iPhone. No. I think that you just need the passion for it. You can do your first two or three videos, but to be a YouTuber, it's consistency. And you can't be consistent unless you have a passion for it. Otherwise, it feels like a chore. And sometimes it is, but it's the passion that keeps you going.
Describe the passion to me. Describe the passion.
It's this need to be understood and this realization that if I'm going through something, surely one other person is going through the same thing. And I could have millions of views. I could have 10 views. But I'm just happy when one person says to me, yeah, me too. It's that. That's where the passion resides for me.
So you're not doing this for yourself? No.
Yes and no. I think that when I get a sense of community, there is a lot of my experiences on a day-to-day basis. When I experience depression, when I experience loneliness, when I experience a feeling of not being good enough or not having done enough at my age or all these inadequacies, there's a level of comfort that comes from putting it out there. So that's for me. That part is for me. And someone else saying, me too. The whole part is for me, really. Yeah. It just so happens it helps other people as well to feel less lonely in their experiences.
And in terms of resources, time and finance, how much does this pull on you?
In the beginning, not much.
Yeah.
It was me and my phone in daylight behind an open window because that's the best lighting. And then as things progressed, you want to become better at a hobby that you like. And you want to create better content. You want it to be better quality. And so that's when I started investing more. But as a starting point, you really, you don't need much.
And the feedback, how has been the feedback like? You know, I'm reminded that somebody who I can't remember says, something is what it is. Praising it doesn't change it. Criticizing it doesn't change it. It just is. What's been the response to what you're doing?
In the beginning, I had in my mind that I'm going to be an influencer. Like, that's my life. That's what I'm going to do. And it really, like, changed dramatically probably in the past 2 years, where I have no want whatsoever to be popular or to be out there, she says, while she's in conversation with each other. Because I'm scared. I'm scared of negative feedback. My YouTube community to this point has been people that I've gathered over the years, and I feel like understand who I am, and they're kind of like, yay, you go, Tash. But then there's always another side to it, right? And I'm not sure if I'm as prepared for the other side, which I know is going to come. Because with growth in the thing that you love, you also have to accept that the thing is the way that it is. Yeah.
But don't you think you actually need those people that are going to say, oh, that was something else, Tash, because that is what makes you grow. Your cheering group doesn't necessarily grow you.
I think that's true to a certain extent.
Not ready for it.
No, I'm never against constructive criticism. What I'm against is cyberbullying.
Okay.
And it's always a very thin line. So the bullying aspect is the side that I'm not prepared for. Because I think it was about, a month ago, I did a video speaking about, like, pricing in Zim and all these things. It blew up. Oh, my gosh. It blew up, and the feedback I was getting was nothing related to what I was talking about. People would be like, yeah, ndosa kaka shata. I'm like, okay. That aspect.
Welcome to reality.
And I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not prepared for it, but it's part of it. So I'm getting to be prepared.
You might have to decide that what people say about you is their opinion. It's none of your business. When they say you're ugly or whatever, they'll say that. But it's none of your business. You put out what you think you need to put out there. Does that help?
It does. And it's something I've been learning, but really slowly and slower than I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely true that other people's opinions should be none of your business. But I can't help it.
Well, the Barack Obama said, and which is something that I actually believe in, I do not read people's feedback because I know who I am. I know what I said.
Yeah.
My favorite pastor said this morning, T.D. Jakes, that he said something that somebody quoted, took out of context, and it went viral. Because usually what goes viral is negative stuff. And he says, I really don't care. And that's my sense. I know what I said. I know who I am. Nobody knows me better than I know myself. So I really do not give. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need to begin thinking along those lines. And don't go there. Because if you go there, you're going to find it. And if you find it, it's going to nag you.
Yeah. Nah, that is 100% true.
And so what's the big thing for the YouTube channel? What are you? I mean, so you're not going to be an influencer. You have discovered that you might not be ready for the criticism. What's going to happen with this thing?
I'm going to get ready for the criticism.
Okay.
And then I want to go back to my original content. So my main thing is facilitating conversations. That's why it's so weird being on the other side of the seat right now. Like, wow, just dig into my soul. Because I love having like panel debates. I love having people of different opinions together and facilitating conversations they wouldn't otherwise have. So I want to go back to my doing that kind of content.
What conversations do you want to have?
Anything that affects people in either my space, like physically, or like my space mentally, or my space age-wise, or my space, anything that affects people in a socioeconomic way that is not always discussed or doesn't always have different opinions on the same table. So we don't take ourselves too seriously on the Zimbabwean channel. We're very laissez-faire, but we discuss.
It's a good thing.
And then it's a way also for people not to realize how deep what they're discussing is, but then you kind of walk away and you're like, huh.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll discuss things like, you know, polyamory within Zim, or just whether you would knowingly, like stigmas with people with HIV, would you knowingly date someone with HIV? Mm. Would you knowingly date someone who has mental health issues or who's suicidal? Things like that. So we'll discuss issues. Maybe it'll be triggered by a hot topic that's happening in the press, but to get people to delve into their own misconceptions or their barriers towards connecting with other people.
Mm. Fantastic. Let me take you to a place where, you know, viewers watching us from the diaspora, people thinking of going in the diaspora might benefit, because your lived experience says you came into this country and you met with us and you didn't like bits of us. What is it that you would say we should change as a people that you encountered and it grated against who you are?
That's a good question.
I want you to answer it.
I was going to say that's a good question, then leave it there. Like, let them marinate on it, right? I think that there's a lot happening and there is a lot of noise in terms of, you know, there's this happening economically, politically, socially, etc. But there's also things within our control, right? Like, we can choose whether we give good service to someone. We can choose whether we go to our job and we say, I'm going to be the best at this today. There's small things, yes, and it doesn't feel like it makes much of a difference, but it does. It does. And I think that something my mom always tells me, and I feel like if and when she sees, not even if, she's like my biggest fan. She's like, tell me when it comes on. When she sees this, she's going to be so happy. The main thing is focusing on what you can control. Mm-hmm. That, to me, has changed my outlook on life completely. And it's made me not worry too much about everything else and all the other noise that's happening around me. Just take a moment and say, what's within my control, and focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Because listening to that clip, watching that clip that you played, I could sense the frustration, and the frustration is the one that I've felt when I came back. Mm. Do you think since coming back, you have changed into who we found us to be?
I have my moments. because it's not a... I don't know if it's a general blanket statement that I can put towards everyone I've experienced. Mm. Everyone is different. Many people will give you like the best service of your life, and they'll be the friendliest. They don't call us friendly people for no reason. That's because a lot of people are. And then you'll have a few who aren't. So it's always going to be different from person to person. And I think that for me, I'm different in that way as well. There's no blanket statement that I could fall under either. Mm. I'm not always friendly, but I have my moments.
Mm. Have you changed your driving? Do you now drive like us on the wrong side of the road? And
Oh, no. I never drove until I came to Zim.
And?
Now I drive like a combi driver.
So you've changed. You've become one of us. To the young people that are watching them, on both sides of the fence, those that are thinking of going into the diaspora, what would you say to them? Those that are thinking of coming back home, what would you say to them? Let's start with those that are thinking, let me pack my bags, it's too tough here, let me go elsewhere. What would you say? I would say The grass is not greener the other side. What would you say?
I would say you're young. Take the chance. Mm-hmm. Go see for yourself. Mm-hmm. Because if I tell you not to, because of my experience, you'd be like, no, if I tell you to do it and you have an ulterior experience, then it's like false advertising. Mm-hmm. Whilst you're young, take the opportunity to do all the things, take all the risks that you want to take, And then figure it out from there.
Those that are wanting come back home, and they're saying, we're seeing Tash, she's on YouTube, she's having fun, she's frustrated, but we're considering it. What would you say to them?
Be patient with your surroundings, but also with yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the image that you thought you were going to be. There's no timeline as to when you're supposed to achieve or be this person. Just be the person you are in that moment and be patient with yourself and cut yourself some slack. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And in terms of your generation, what view do you take about where our country is right now?
I think that we're under a lot of pressure. Mentally, there's a reason why, and it's been spoken about a lot recently, like on Twitter, in terms of just like the rate, like suicidal rates and mental health issues, the way that it's going. I feel like we're under a lot of pressure to be in a certain place or look a certain way. And outside of that, there's like social media pressure when you feel like your peers are here. Why am I not there? I think that as a community, millennials from my perspective, and I can't always speak for everyone, but those who I feel like I can speak to are feeling a little inadequate.
Is it because of our society, or this is a generational thing, and what can be done?
I think it's a bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a societal aspect, but then it's a generational thing as well, because we're not the only millennials that are going through it. Yeah. And I think that's the advantage of having lived in as many places as I have. My friends from like Germany, my friends from Singapore, in different economies, which are, you know, however they are, experiencing a lot of the same feelings and insecurities and inadequacies that I feel. So you're not alone in that. And also, that's why I say, just be patient with yourself, because at some point things start to come right, and enjoy the wins. Mm. Yeah.
You've spoken about your mother a number of times. You say she's your big fan. She dragged you all across the world. What did you get the most from your mom and your dad?
Oh, just like... Are you trying to make me cry, Trev? Oh my gosh. I think tenacity. Yeah. And ambition. And above all, just kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She must be proud of you.
She's like, well, she says I'm right. She doesn't want me to be too confident.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've just got married.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. To him.
Yeah. Has it turned out the way you expected it to be?
Better.
But don't tell him name? I told you. What's his name? He's going to be watching us.
I know, right? Yeah, his name is Jabu.
Jabu.
Hi. No, it's great. Because we, like I told you earlier, unconventional to Zim. Mm. We lived together for about 3 years before we got married. Mm. And whilst we were living together, and even when he asked me to marry him, I was like, oh God, I just hope everything stays the same. Like, people are going to marriage and they're like, and then this will change. And then he'll be like this. I'm like, just let him stay the same, Jesus. And he has.
Yes.
So,
it's fantastic. We wish you the best.
Highly recommend.
Books, the people that watch this show love books, and I'm looking forward to your book recommendations. What books do you suggest we read?
The Bible, for starters.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
As a starting point. But then there's this book, I can't remember who it's by, called, it's a classic, Waiting for Godot.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend that book, especially for millennials right now.
Good.
It teaches in patience.
Mm. Waiting for
Godot.
Godot. G-O-D-O-T.
G-O-D-O-T.
Okay. Any other book?
Nah.
No.
I don't read for fun anymore.
Really?
Yeah, law ruined that for me.
I find that's the case with a number of lawyers, because there's a lot of reading that you people do, hey?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I used to love books and reading. So when I can, I do.
Do you think being a YouTuber has killed your reading too?
Possibly. I never thought about it, but you might be right.
You know? Tosh, what a pleasure it's been talking to you.
Honestly, it really
thank
has.
You. Thank you so much. Learned so much from you. I wish you the best in a number of areas. Being an attorney, newly married with somebody that you live with for 3 years, being a YouTuber, praying that that flourishes. We need new conversations. We need narratives that describe us. And we need to tell our own stories. And you and I need to do that. So thank you so much. Wishing you the best. And thanking you for finding the time to join me here. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It was
so nice.
Just beautiful. Yeah. Allow me to turn over to our guests who are all over the world who watch us every Monday. We're out every Monday, 7 a.m. Central African time. To ensure that you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, such as the one I've just had with Tashia, please click on the subscribe button and subscribe. When and if you are a subscriber, you will get an alert every time we have one of these quality conversations. Remember to subscribe, to share, to like, and go on to our website, convowithtrevor.com. All our content sits there. Thank you for watching. Until next time, cheers to you all.